Yeah. I'm a techno peasant. So pushing a button is like overwhelming. So tonight I'm really pleased to have three wonderful poets here. I'm welcoming back Pat Nolan and Keith Abbott, who gave a reading on Rango poetry here, was it last year?
Last year.
And in addition, Sandy Berrigan. So, Pat Nolan and Keith Abbott are part of a group called the Minor School of Rangu Poetry, and they've been practicing Ranga for about 30 years now. Mm-hmm. So I won't tell you what Ranga is, or Rangu, but I will turn it over to our three poets for this evening. Thank you very much for coming to Many Rivers. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we had a great time when we were here last year, a very receptive audience, and thanks to Jim. Afterwards, we got a lot of very nice emails, and one of the emails was from Norman Darlington, who is the editor of the Ranga editor of Simply Haiku, which is a fairly large international online magazine that features haiku and haibun and Ranga. And he got in touch with Keith, because Keith was a professor, obviously, so he had higher status.
Yes.
And so they published, our haikai, Haikai no Ranga, which is the kind of link verse that the Basho practiced. And we made up a name for ourselves, a minor school of Haikai poets, and it's not M-I-N-O-R, it's M-I-N-E-R after Earl Minor, who was a wonderful teacher and explicator of this Japanese linked verse form, which we'll be talking about tonight. And so we've gained a little bit of international fame just from reading here. So, this is kind of like the center of the Northern California Ranga, in a sense. Yeah, well, it gives me chills, too. But maybe the wrong kind. But we will... And Sandy Berrigan is here with us tonight, and Sandy and I have been writing linked verse through the mail.
The mail.
M-A-I-L. I guess we're going to have to spell these things tonight. Since 1993.
Well, he says that, and I can't believe it, but it takes a long time through the mail. So it's definitely written a lot of poems, but pretty lot, considering it's pretty good. I'm always floored when I hear that.
Right. We've written six of them through the mail, and it takes about a year. So it's not a process that happens
every year. That's because the post office is so bad?
Well, no, it's because Sandy takes a lot of vacations, goes to Mexico, and she's in Guatemala, and those kind of things.
Right. And Pat stays home all the time.
That's right. Well, in case I get some mail. Somebody's got to be there to receive it. But, just to explain, traditionally, what was done with the haikai poets, particularly Basho, is they would have a group of poets and in a setting very similar to this, and they would write a 36 stanza Ranga in an evening. And essentially they took about 3 minutes per link. So somebody would write their stanza, and then somebody else had 3 minutes to link to it. And it's not like, there was a time or anything like that, but they had practiced so well and so much that they could just kind of fit into the flow. Am I right, Keith?
Yeah, but they had those big sleeves and they had cheat sheets up here.
That's true.
But the thing is, somebody else has a few cheat sheets.
Yeah. I have cheat sheets. But what... the thing is that these groups were Ranga groups, but what they would do is they would get together maybe on a weekly basis, and they would write hoku, which is the opening verse to the Ranga, and which is what we understand, which eventually evolved into haiku. So haiku stands alone, but its origins are in linked verse with the hoku. And so everybody would practice writing hoku. And there are the seasonal words and various other kinds of, rules that you had to follow if you're going to write it. And then somebody like Basho, who was a poetry teacher, would judge their verse and make corrections and things like that. And so essentially that's what they did. They would get together and they'd write hoku. And then every once in a while, maybe once a month or every quarter, they would get together and then write the linked verse. But they'd been practicing writing the hoku. So they had it as a mindset. And so it was fairly easy to kind of jump in there and do. And there were corrections, I think.
Yeah.
And they had a scribe, so it wasn't like they wrote it down. Somebody would write it down as they said it. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of an oral poetry in a sense.
Well, also, when you the things you sent me, they said they did it in court, too.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys would do it in court as well.
That was the Renga. That was Renga.
Yeah, the Renga would be done in the court, which to me is like playing Scrabble or something. You know, this
it is
their
a
form of Scrabble,
game.
You know, literary game, but more beautiful.
Not just one word, but several.
At least 17 syllables.
17 of word.
A lot of noise.
So we're going to read some of the Renga that we've written. Sandy and I just finished one called Orange and Raw, and it's the sixth one in the series of Sandy had the idea that we should write one for each color of the rainbow. She's from Mendocino. So we've completed that, and this is the last poem. And I have to say that when I first started writing with Sandy, well, I knew Sandy was a poet, and I knew her former husband, Ted Berrigan, and I'd seen some of Sandy's books of poems, and I knew that she had a talent for the epigrammatic. So she could be very concise and get to the point. So it was an easy transition for her, though at first she had problems with counting syllables.
Well, everybody does. I've been counting syllables, and I see many people don't like to count syllables, and so at first I had troubles, but I noticed in other poems there's the troubles with syllables.
We won't mention Joanne Cuyo.
Oh, no, I think even other people, unless I can't spell or syllabate.
Yeah, I didn't know.
And just to explain the way it works is that there is a stanza that is 17 syllables that we lineate as a three-line stanza, and that is linked with a 14-syllable stanza that's lineated as two lines. And so one person writes the three lines, the other person links with it or the three lines to the two lines, and back and forth. And since there are only two of us writing this one in particular, we have to double up sometimes. So somebody will link with themselves so that somebody isn't always writing the 17 syllable. And so you can go back and forth that way. What am I missing? But you're going to comment on this.
Yes, I'll comment and let's make it all clear after they get done reading.
Right.
I think we should tell people who don't know this that it is not a story. I think that's the hardest thing. It is not a narrative. And so that's the hardest thing when you're writing it, is to try to, for me, is to not make it be a story. And I think that's really essential.
Well, that's a very good point, Sandy.
We won't look for a story in these poems.
Because the way these linking, one of the rules for linking is that two stanzas can continue a thread, but three cannot.
Oh, really?
So you always have to vector off. So you have to be aware of what came before and what came after. And then the fifth stanza, the 14th stanza, and the 29th stanza are moon stanzas. The 17th and the 35th are flower stanzas. We generally include a blossom, but sometimes we... And we break the rules like crazy.
We do?
Oh, absolutely. No.
Well, try not.
Everybody knows that they got a flower stanza. They're already assigned it, or a moon stanza, so they can prepare something or think about it beforehand. It's not like you suddenly turn to them and say, moon.
In particular, because we do it through the mail, and it takes almost a year. In fact, this one here actually took 10 months.
Yeah.
But the one the other one we're going to read, which is was written by five of us by the Haikai school, by the Minor School of Haikai Poets, took almost exactly a year.
Yeah.
Mm. So when they would write them in an evening, they would kind of modulate the way the seasons work their way through the stanzas. But since we're writing them over a year, generally we're writing about the season that we're in when we're writing them. So that's the big difference.
That gets mixed up sometimes, right? Because sometimes the season seems to be all too many of the same season or too big of a jump from one season to the next. Right.
Okay. Well, why don't we just start reading Orange and Raw, and then we'll see the way it works out.
Can I ask you a quick question before you do that? You said something about them being two lines and three lines, but these are not.
Okay. Well, they are, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's not printed that way.
If you see the first stanza here is a three-line stanza. That's the hoku. Uh-huh. It's joined by two lines.
And then repeated.
It's repeated. We repeat the first verse.
Yeah.
Because where the origins of...
Oh, okay.
Of linked verse actually come from Japanese court poetry, which is the waka or the tanka. Mm. And it was a 31 syllable poem, but it was written by one person.
Oh.
But as a literary game, uh-huh. somebody would write the 17 syllables and the other person would write the 14.
Oh, I see.
And then it evolved into this chain. And they would go on for hundreds of verses. It's, in the court, and that was Renga. It was a very formalized kind of poetry, very strict. And the thing with Basho, particularly in Basho's time, which is 17th century Japan, they were more middle class, and they were more of the merchant class. So they used signified language. So they would use Chinese phrases, which was not allowed in the Renga. And they would use, scatological things and more humorous things, more befitting of the way the middle class people thought, or the merchants.
It really had daily life in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there Much were plumbers daily. And there were carpenters and stuff showed up where they wouldn't show up in the court poetry.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
No, this is
cool.
I forget what we're doing most of the time. Thanks.
Thanks for prompting us.
You can count the syllables in each of them, too, if you want.
No.
Yeah, this one actually, and the thing is that Sandy got so good, and Sandy is just a terrific haikai poet. She got so good at doing her stanzas in 17 and 14, and probably doesn't even think about it anymore. So in this set, I believe everything is 17 and 14. Yes.
Is 17 and 14 an option in this country?
Yeah.
Okay, but you two chose and continue to choose 17 and 14, or you three?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do it because I like rules. Then I don't have to worry about
subjective.
Anything.
Yeah.
I just count it. Okay. He's a Virgo, too. He can follow the rules.
Okay, so we'll start. Orange and Raw, and this is the last color of the rainbow. So I wrote the hoku. In the cold light of morning, new fence boards tinged with frost, orange and raw.
In the cold light of morning, new fence boards tinged with frost, orange and raw. Knuckles on the bare spring earth, many new wrinkles appear.
Knuckles on the bare spring earth, many new wrinkles appear. Steady rains call a blackbird convention, the lot no longer vacant.
Steady rains call a blackbird convention, the lot no longer vacant. For the moment, I've lost it. Glasses, syllables, words, lists.
For the moment, I've lost it. Glasses, syllables, words, lists. The half-eaten moon above the bramble bank looming in the headlights.
The half-eaten moon above the bramble bank looming in the headlights. Itchy eyes, pollen in the wind. Lose or gain light, what difference? Itchy eyes, pollen in the wind, lose or gain light, what difference? Day before a trip, break in the rhythm of home, out there, city music.
Day before a trip, break in the rhythm of home, out there, city music. A river of ice crystals cuts across my blue heaven.
A river of ice crystals cuts across my blue heaven. True love comes and trims my horny painted toenails, new stockings like silk.
True love comes and trims her horny painted toenails, new stockings like silk. In myth he rode the wild sow, white scar the length of his calf.
In myth he rode the wild sow, white scar the length of his calf. Wind ruffles her hair, dramatic moment passes, dead mossy branches.
Wind ruffles her hair, dramatic moment passes, dead mossy branches, berry profusion unpicked, onyx luster oxidized. Berry profusion unpicked, onyx luster oxidized. Clear skies forecast the dark sheen of west wet asphalt as the rain comes and goes.
Clear skies forecast the dark sheen of wet asphalt as the rain comes and goes. Honeycomb moon almost full, cold star bees buzzing all around.
Honeycomb moon full, almost full, cold star bees buzzing all around. Beyond what is there, the event horizon, other worlds beckon gravely.
Beyond what is there, the event horizon, other worlds beckon gravely. Over the edge of the high cliff, bull pine leans in the wind.
At the edge of the high cliff, a bull pine leans in the wind, as blossoms hum in the moody light, a breaking sky chases the squall.
As blossoms hung in the moody light, a breaking sky chases the squall. Cold fog rolls in, I turn back, climate change around the block. Cold fog rolls in, I turn back, climate change around the block. A high, sweet voice sings, gratitude with difficulty. Fire burns everywhere.
A high, sweet voice sings, gratitude with difficulty. Fires burn everywhere. Shirt off in the heat of day, berry stains on my belly.
Shirt off in the heat of day, berry stains on my belly. Mouse-eaten paper, Big Dipper empty. Black hole, here thirst unslaked.
Mouse-eaten paper, Big Dipper, empty black hole, your thirst unslaked. A little bit of tea in the cup and the ring it made.
A little bit of tea in the cup and the ring it made. He calls me on the telephone. No new good news. I sit there amused.
She calls me on the telephone. No new good news. I sit there amused. Tonight I'm just a hat rack and a pair of red slippers. Oh, tonight I'm just a hat rack and a pair of red slippers. Fine rain visible in the streets, lights orange glow, wind scattering leaves.
Fine rain visible in the street lights orange glow, wind scattering leaves. The scent of it, the feel good, a crane stands there, not moving.
The scent of it, the feel good, a crane stands there, not moving. In that one moment, high wide cloud band spanning blue, all of day contained.
In that one moment, high wide cloud band spanning blue, all of day contained. A cold gets me down to earth. Can a human feel painless?
A cold gets me down to earth. Can a human feel painless? Under a full moon, the dark's hazy pale edges toss and turn restless.
Under a full moon, the dark's hazy, pale edges toss and turn, restless. She was there, tall and shining, a persimmon in her hand. She was there, tall and shining, a persimmon in her hand. Heavy-headed caprice, the delightful wine, too much, mumbled the hermit.
Heavy-headed caprice, the delightful wine, too much, mumbled the hermit. Now that the bottle's empty, who will keep me company?
Now that the bottle's empty, who will keep me company? Juncos migrating. Red berries in the bush nearby. The song of the South.
Juncos migrating. Red berries in the bush nearby. The song of the South. A wet blankets the landscape and leaves a beauty forlorn.
A wet blankets the landscape and leaves a beauty forlorn. Orange chrysanthemums, hail turned to brittle snow, my foolish heart cools.
Orange chrysanthemums, hail turns to brittle snow, her foolish heart cools. Over glistening frozen rooftops, a lone egret sails.
Cat told me since I was a professor I had to talk about this poem for a little bit. I told him that I didn't know what I'd say, but just hearing it read out loud sort of helps. One of the things about writing Renku is that you really have to get a simple mind going periodically, because you have to sort of think about what is going to change. In this poem, there's a lot of changes that go on throughout the poem when something that's silent, suddenly a noise comes in, or something happens, a noise comes in, and that changes. That's enough to make the change in the stanza. So when you talk about, well, we want change, sometimes the change is very simple, and you just go from a silent scene to suddenly you link a noise to it, or somebody talking. And it also sort of, you can also go from inside to outside. So some of these lines are inside, happen inside a house or inside someplace, and then other ones happen outside. And sometimes you have an inside, and then you have to break it. You have to change it. So that's the change that happens. So if you look at the first page, you've got the start of it is basically pictures, and then in the third stanza it says, knuckles on the bare spring earth, many new wrinkles appear, unless you have really noisy wrinkles. You know, it's a silent thing. And then steady rains call, a blackbird convention, the lot no longer vacant. And suddenly there's noise in this scene. So that's the change that happens. And then it goes on with talking about syllables, losing track of words, and that sort of thing. So suddenly this noise that's happening is a human noise, and you have a reaction or a relationship to that noise. I love the different things that happen in this poem, especially at the bottom of the first page, when a river of ice crystals, the second to the last stanza, a river of ice crystals cuts across my blue heaven. True love comes and trims my horny painted toenails, new stockings like silk. And it's really a nice, you know, intimate moment there where something's happening inside a house and there's something happening to one person. And suddenly you're going from ice crystals and blue heaven and kind of cosmic things, suddenly you're down to looking at your feet. And so it's kind of a quick pan down, so it's very pleasant. We always like to put in common things, too, in these. So you have names like My Blue Heaven, which is a song, and you hear a little song. And in Japanese, they often reference songs and things because there's so many festivals and rituals around music and things. So we do the same thing, except we're using Hoagy Carmichael tunes or something. Frank Sinatra or something. So we have a different set of values. The other thing that struck me, what? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, we're just laughing at the reference to Hoagy Carmichael.
Right.
Probably some people here never heard of him.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. You have time things, too, here, where people won't know what they are. But if you're too cosmic, it just doesn't have the feeling that you want. Like, this is life, and we live it, and we know what it means, and then maybe it'll mean something to somebody else later. We don't know. I like on the second page here, the fourth one from the bottom, at the edge of the high cliff, the bull pine leans in the wind, and the idea of a bull pine sort of gives you the idea of power. Being faced in the wind, working power, working together. And then it says, the blossoms hum in the moody light, a breaking sky chases the squall. So suddenly everything's, there's this kind of power against power, and then suddenly everything breaks up and frazzles and goes around. So that's another shift that we often look for. We try to give people rapid change all of a sudden. We have this idea that the other person, you're giving that person that link, and they have to link to it. By God, So they have a problem. Sometimes you can give them a real problem. Pat and I like to call that putting your partner behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. You give them a really tough link and they go, oh, what am I going to do with that one? You know, or it's too noisy or it's too crazy or something. And so you give them a challenge, you challenge them. And other times you really, you know, join in and you really have a five lines that all fit together. And that's a pleasure too. But it's also, we like to, you know,
keep the tension.
Keep the tension. Get them off balance. Get your partner off balance. See what that happens to them. On the last page, I really like the two stanzas there at the top of the page. She was there, tall and shining, a persimmon in her hand. Which I think is a marvelous still image. You know, it's, what an incredible thing to see all of a sudden. And then heavy-headed caprice, the delightful wine too much, mumbled the hermit. So you have, you know, somebody saying they're saying something, but it's not quoted directly. It's not quotations. And then the next line is, now that the bottle's empty, who will keep me company? So the hermit suddenly starts talking, whereas before he just kind of mumbled to himself. So these kind of changes are really a pleasure to think about. And the way that we often talk about them is what we're doing is we're making a home movie. And these are all scenes in a home movie or a movie that's happening in our life. So.
And another way to think of it, too, is to think of it as a jazz improvisation. So the first maybe, and the way they did it in a group was that there were salutary, the opening hoku was generally salutary, and the link to that was another acknowledgement of the salutation. And, you know, thank you to the host, because they were generally parties that were... So there's all these kind of things that were fit in there. And then once you get the, you know, the link going, or the renku going, you know, there are set things. You have to have that moon at the fifth stanza. And then by the eighth stanza, you're allowed to go free. And so you can do an improvisation, and that's what essentially what we do. We do a lot of improvisation, and like Keith said, we do challenge each other, particularly Keith and I, when we, you know. Also with the other people in the group, we try to send a stanza out there, because you're going to get it in the mail, and you have no idea what it's going to be, especially if you're doing more than just two people. If you're doing five, like the one we're going to read now, so it's gone to four other people before it gets back to you. So you have no idea what the progression is going to be. So, but you have to concentrate that you have to link with just that stanza. You can't think about what went on before, with the exception of not being you don't want to repeat anything that went before. But
It's sort of like you're doing a jazz thing, but one of the rules is they have, the person who just finishes his last solo has to go outside and then come back in the room. You know. What's happening?
I don't think that's such a problem.
Yeah.
I don't think it's such a problem. The problem is, I think, not repeating too much, and because you know that you're not telling a story poem, so then you just have to try to do it. And what I see in this one now is actually, it's quite of a piece. There's a whole lot of rain in here.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I realized that, I thought, oh, God, that's a problem. There's too much rain. But it's so wonderful when you're reading it in a rainy day and you see how rain comes and goes in your life. And all I would like to say is I never know what's going on with these. When I write this, it's all basically from intuition.
Yeah.
And so I do have to think about the issues not repeating and the change of seasons, and I think about those things because I know it's important, but it really is much more intuitive process. And that this whole one about the hermit, I think it's so wonderful. I'm the kind of person who, when she writes, she likes it. If she don't like it, I wouldn't show it. And so this whole sequence about the hermit is so exciting to me because, you know, Basho and Cold Mountain, all these hermits, and what they did was drink their sake, and they were waiting for their company to come and have a drink with. And so Pat, he's like the hermit, and this tall and shiny woman with the persimmon in her hand, that was like a goddess. And I'm not too into goddess worship, really, But she was this kind of a goddess, the goddess of the persimmon. And so she is the one who appeared to the hermit. That was great. I thought that was great, because usually he waits for an old buddy to come and drink his sake with him.
Well, not all hermits are lucky.
But Sandy linked when she put the she linked to the moon stanza, which was the, on the previous page, under full moon, the dark hazy pale edges toss and turn restlessly. So you see that the goddess appears in a dream. So you see how important that link is, and the way she did it intuitively. So there's a kind of a dark and haziness, and then she links with the shining woman. And then she had to link with herself, because she had to link, she was there tall and shining, a persimmon in her hand, and then she added the heavy-headed caprice stanza to that, which worked wonderfully. And I just happened to have... Now that the bottle's empty, who will keep me company? I mean, that's a, that's something that goes through my head all the time, especially when the bottle's empty. So, and that, in a way, that fit perfectly. And but Sandy and I have been writing, and the same thing happens when I write with Keith too. Is that we have a natural instinct for, you know, how we're gonna make things flow. And last year, Keith and I wrote something called Poetry for Sale, which was a riff off of something that Basho and Kikuku did. And Basho was a poetry teacher. And what they, what Earl Miner thought was that they'd written this linked verse. It's a kasan, 36 stanzas. It's called a kasan. As a prospectus for garnering new students. And actually, what the way Miner translated it was, poetry is what I sell. And Kiku had, Kikuku had written that poku. And I changed it to, essentially, I just modified the opening stanza of that poem and made it poetry for sale. And after we're done here, I made a little book with that hoku in it, and you can take a look at it. Unfortunately, there were only 36 copies of this book, and I believe two here are probably the last two. So what we did is we wrote the hoku, the renga through the mail, and then after we were done with it, we were so pleased that we wrote a commentary. So on one side is the Renga, the link verse, and then on the other side is the commentary on what we did. And so it kind of explains our thinking behind that. And that's something that, a little innovation, I think, that we came up with as far as the folks, that, you know, the group of us that are writing haikai, is that we started writing commentary, and the piece that was carried in the Simply Haiku had commentary along with it. And so so then we can talk about why we link that way, or what we were feeling. Yeah, some just general comments about that.
Let's read this one.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Two questions. Thank you for this beautiful piece, and thank you for explaining the hermit for us, because at first it really took me out back to, you know, Japanese tradition centuries ago, though the line, you know, when the bottle's empty, I can relate to. And I wondered if that was part of the technique, that you can, you know, time travel and incorporate it in, or whether you generally try and stay in the present, or if it doesn't matter.
Things come up because we study all this stuff, and so there's images that come up, and if you have a hermit image, then we can go back to that, or we can go forward into our own life, which we may be quite alone for periods of time, and think of ourselves as in a hermitage or in a hermit.
I don't think, I mean, I personally think I fit that category, but it's not a name I would use about myself, because I'm more likely to say more social recluse or something, because the hermit has a religious connotation, and I think both the Buddhist and Christian traditions.
Yeah,
hermit has two syllables too. So keeping track of
it. Yeah. So it threw me initially, as I say, because it took me back to Japanese, centuries ago.
Well, there is resonance, I think.
As you've explained it, I've cottoned on to more of the resonance. I don't think truly we have many hermits today. It's impossible in this culture where we're so busy charging here, there, and everywhere, including here tonight. My second question relates, I'm wondering, in terms of revising. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, on a PC, on a computer, it's a lot easier if you make revisions. What do you do? Let's say you've sent your three lines out, you've gotten the two lines back, and you say, well, I don't quite get this, or this, you know, would you consider this a little repetitious, or shall we change it, or how do you go about that process, if at all?
No revision.
No, we don't do it. Sometimes I would send to Pat maybe two or three possibilities, because I'm insecure sometimes. So I'd send him these possibilities, and he usually would take the first one. That was my first inspiration.
Right.
And sometimes, can we tell them about what you change? The pronouns?
Yeah,
sometimes
the
parent changes the pronoun because it's a man writing it rather than me.
Well, actually, that's
a
kind of...
We don't revise.
The thing is that the Japanese language is so ambiguous. So their pronoun, so you don't know when it's female or male. And what we can do is we can change that. And reading minors' translations of the Japanese haikai, we come across that, and he changes subtle things. And his explanation is that because the language is so ambiguous, that it can go this way or that way. It's not strict.
Right.
So you don't have to have a strict repetition. And so we kind of, I think, picked up on that and going, oh, yeah, now that's a neat trick.
Yeah.
You know, we like that.
So somebody else gets the thing, they can change it to he or she or her or his and make it part of their link. So,
right.
You know, it's a way to... It's like in music, somebody might play a certain sequence of notes with somebody to say, okay, when I play that sequence, that melody, I'm going to transpose two notes.
Yeah, I'm going
to just make it
something.
To do something
yeah,
else.
I'm talking about also less subtle changes. If you have an evening, you said traditionally they're sitting together in an evening, however many people. We don't know, or do we, from the writing, how much, you know, I give my two lines worth, and my master or another person says, very nice, what if you change these two words around?
That would happen in the accounts that we've read about the way Basho and Busan conducted their linked verse parties, that was something. But, you know, they got to be so good after a while that they didn't have to do that. And that's what happened with Sandy and myself. Of course, Keith and I have been doing this for 30 years, so we hardly ever revise. Mm-hmm. So, essentially, in this poem here, there were no revisions.
No. That's one of the pleasures of writing this poem. You just write two lines or three lines, and you send it away. It's beautiful. It's like non-attachment. It's just, you write it, it's done. You don't have to sweat and agonize. It's like not about my personal emotional feelings. And so that's why I don't write anything else but this now. Because I don't want to write about my personal feelings, and I don't have anything to say about them, but I have plenty. There's plenty in the world to look at.
Yeah.
And so it's a brilliant form for me.
Right.
I love it. And, you know, reading it tonight, I thank everybody for listening, because reading it, it gives me a lot of pleasure, this form of writing. It shows you the beauty of the universe.
Yeah. Right, and it's a cooperative verse form.
Yeah.
So, which is unusual. Because, you know, the poetic ego is rather large.
No, it isn't.
It's superior. Big.
No, you're wrong, Pat.
No, Brenda has no fighting. No disagreements.
No disagreements. We may push, particularly Keith and I, when we do our Ranga, especially if I he's going to send me a link or I'm going to send him a link. I try to, you know, really challenge him, and he always rises to the challenge. Of course, in this next one that we're going to read, there were five of us, and Keith was worried that he had sent Sandy a really tough link. Then when I saw Sandy's link, he just kind of went, no.
I don't remember. Pat remembers these things. Right. No. Okay, I'm not going to blow up my cover on this one.
Yeah.
I was never worried.
Okay.
So I'll start with it. We've got the poem's called. Did they end up with Skyku? Is the title? Is that right?
I was calling it Andasha in my mind, but I think Maureen. We should explain that there were five of us writing it. Three of us are here: Maureen Owen, who's a poet from Colorado, and Mike Soule, who's a poet from Minnesota.
Duluth, Minnesota. Yeah,
Duluth, Minnesota. And so we would, you know, Keith and I and Maureen have computers, but Sandy and Mike don't. So they would get it through the mail and then pass it on to the next person. And, you know, around and around. So we're going to just read them in sequence, but Keith's going to Maureen started the hoku, and she, and sometimes we have something that we call the guest hoku, and Keith and I have written one where we used a Jack Kerouac haiku as the beginning, and this time Maureen used a Lorraine Niedecker poem. So
it starts with her poem, and it goes, sky in my favor, to fly to downtown, crowds home, and Basho on my mind.
Sky in my favor, to fly to downtown, crowds home, and Basho on my mind. That sound in its memory ripples after a frog's splash.
That sound in its memory ripples after a frog's splash. Hot world beat, white tent. Six ravens shriek in the trees. The crowd moans and sweats and moves.
Hot world beat, white tent. Six ravens shriek in the trees. The crowd sweats and moves. Along a long hillside lane of grape vines, a line of fireflies.
We had fun with this on the computer today. Somehow my computer keeps putting in words that are similar, but they're not the right words. Along a hillside lane of grapevines, a line of fireflies, hatchet chopped half moon, opal in the summer haze, blues fest tune rising.
Hatchet chopped half moon, opal in the summer haze, blues fest tunes rising. End of a 2-day torrent. A lone cricket chirps midday.
You got this one?
Okay. No, you got it.
End of a 2-day torrent. A lone cricket chirps midday. Early fall bluster. Even the fallen leaves turn their backs to the wind.
Early fall bluster. Even the falling leaves turn their back to the wind. Sweet apples still ripening. Thin branches heavily laden.
Sweet apples still ripening. Thin branches heavily laden. Only women in the rose garden. In summer, whites he ambles in.
Only women in this new rose garden. In summer, whites he ambles in. Writing letters from the earth for the kids of tomorrow.
Writing letters from the earth for the kids of tomorrow. The stock market falls. Violence in Bolivia. Long days without oranges.
So, stock markets fall. Violence in Bolivia. Long days without oranges. A quarry pond, perfectly round ice, crisscrossed by fox tracks.
A quarry pond, perfectly round ice, crisscrossed by fox tracks. Circle of red rock, Geronimo sits his paint high on the mesa.
Circle of red rock, Geronimo on his paint high on the mesa. The moon up to her old tricks. Where's it all going, honey?
The moon up to her old tricks. Where's it all going, honey? The dark winter street. Young neighbor, a new mortgage, late night remodel.
The dark winter street. Young neighbor, a new mortgage, late night remodel. Sun up and it's finally quiet. the way things are around here.
Sun up and it's finally quiet, the way things are around here. A dollar late, a day late, a dollar short. Three goldfinch on a trumpet vine, yellow hollyhocks.
A day late, a dollar short. Three goldfinch on trumpet vine, yellow hollyhocks. Autumn wind, a young child's fret. Will the leaves ever come back?
Autumn wind, a young child's fret. Will the leaves ever come back? Hostages taken, ephemeral breaking news. Antiquity burns.
Hostages taken, ephemeral breaking news. Antiquity burns. Dishes clatter in the suds. Anchorman's serious drone.
Dishes clatter in the suds. Anchorman's serious drone. Raised hand pointing high over the snow-washed valley. Venus, Jupiter.
Raised hand pointing high over the snow-washed valley. Venus, Jupiter. Mid-yard pokes a for sale sign. Crystal clear, but out of work.
Mid-yard pokes a for sale sign. Crystal clear, but out of work. They could care less. Stamp their feet, rub hands around the fire-breathing barrel.
They could care less. Stamp their feet, rub hands around the fire-breathing barrel. Hurrah, that season long gone. Small patch of pale green grass shoots.
Hurrah, that season's long gone. Small patch of pale green grass shoots. We love you. Stay sober. Soaked on a windshield of a ratty muscle car.
We love you. Stay sober. Soaked on a windshield of a ratty muscle car. Minnesota bragging rights, 40 below, and the wind.
Minnesota bragging rights, 40 below, then the wind. Storm in our favor. Hearken, our new president, and change on our mind.
Storm in our favor. Hearken, our new president, and change on our mind. A penny on the wet asphalt picked it up for good luck.
A penny on the wet asphalt picked it up for good luck. A wide smile guides me, the twin's head round as the moon, home on a dark night.
A wide smile guides me, the twin's head round as the moon, home on a dark night. Slowly the wind-blown field combed as far as the eye can see.
Slowly the wind-blown field combed for as far as the eye can see. One tooth tusk broken? How did I end up with this? Green glazed clay hippo.
One tooth tusk broken? How did I end up with this? Green glazed clay hippo. Slow spring snow melt revealing neighbor's dog long winter days.
Slow spring snow melt revealing neighbor's dog's long winter days. Crunch of dry leaves overhead. Our roofer sails a tile past my window.
Crunch of dry leaves overhead. Our roofer sails a tile past my window. I long for a quiet cup of tea. Under the delicate maple.
She longs for a quiet cup of tea under the delicate maple. When the rain let up, crossing the bridge, old woman with a sprig of plum.
When the rain let up, crossing the bridge, old woman with a sprig of plum. Watching the twilight dew fall into the water bucket.
The end. Wow. We got the tea in. Yeah, little advertisement for you.
That's great too.
So you can see, we had a lot of fun with this one, and five people kind of opened it out to a lot of different stuff. Yeah, we had politics in there.
Yeah,
you know, TV news.
Minnesota winter.
Yeah, 40 below.
So Michael gets to talk about his Minnesota winters because he lives in Minnesota, in Duluth, where it really gets cold. Both Keith and Maureen live in Colorado, and then Sandy and I both live on the, in Northern California. So you can see that there are a variance there. But I don't know if you noticed how much more diverse the links were, so that we went a lot more places than we would with just the two of us.
Maureen is really zany.
And this is being recorded, so yes. She's going to hear this.
I don't care. Oh, okay. That thing about the hippo, that is so zany. And it's so great because I went to the Rosicrucian Museum in San Jose, and the hippo, I'm senior memory, the hippo has special symbolism in childbirth and fertility for women in Egypt. I have a whole page about it, and there's a name of the god. And so when I read this paper that I'm going through my papers, and I thought, oh, this really makes the hippo a lot more interesting and more important. And so in the poem it sounds zany, but then you put this other stuff that you've learned about the hippo, and it just seems like expansive.
Yeah. Maureen, whenever she sends me a link, I'm always going, okay, hang on to your seat here. What's going to happen with this one? Because she always gets out. Either it's amazingly emotional or it has
Well, thank God for Maureen.
Yeah, thank God for Maureen. Yes, really opens up. But the green hippo, you know, it's like somebody looking up and saying, oh my God, how did that get in my house? You know, why do I have that thing there? You know.
Yeah, but it can't be as bad as that shark's head link that you threw her at her in that other poem.
Yeah, she was a little...
She was getting you back.
Yeah, maybe it was a little bit of payback here, yeah. Bounce around me there. But there's a lot of things where you see something, you read the link, and then you see something, and you usually follow your intuition on that. You say, okay, that's what I saw. Maybe that's the link. And normally, what you think is out to lunch sometimes actually just comes right in after a little bit of thought. You know, and suddenly realize, oh, that'll work.
Well, one of the things that if you're stuck, you can pick a word in the previous link and link on that.
Right.
You can pick maybe a feeling that you get out of it, some gut kind of feeling. And I know when Sandy and I first started working on writing these, I would say, you know, you have five senses, so try to go through each of those just kind of vary things, because you want to do that. And the other thing, too, is to make some really interesting kind of sentences. So they don't have to be perfect sentences. You vary the syntax. You chop it up. You leave off your articles because you are under the strictures of trying to write under either 14 or 17 syllables, you have these little tricks for concision to make things succinct. So if you can reverse a stanza or, you know, play with it and make it an interesting language, essentially.
I think Maureen's biggest boomerang that she threw me once was, she threw me a link that was a recipe for a bean stew or something like that. You know?
Oh, yeah, white bean soup.
Yeah, white bean soup. And I went, oh, wow, you know, that gives me a lot of things to think about. You know, where is it being made? What's it smell like? You know, what's happening with this thing? Because it's marvelous. You can put a list in, you know, a two-line list, because we live by lists. You know, we do. We make lists in our lives. They're coordinated around.
Right, so. and the other thing too is that you can notice what the previous link's syntax is like.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And you can either copy it, or you can write something that will kind of go against it. You know, so if you have something that's very flowing, maybe you want something that's paratactic. You know, just
chop,
blip, blip. You know, that kind of thing. I know, there's all kinds of things that you can use. You can use things that you've heard. You know, you hear something on the radio, you can maybe make that into it. I know one of the Renku that we wrote years ago, I used the stage directions to a Tennessee Williams play, because they worked perfectly, and it was just, you know, a little three-line thing. I just stuck it right in there.
So I said something like that. That seems kind of dramatic or something. He said, I stole it from Tennessee Williams. Oh! The blue guitar or something?
Yeah, it was a blue something.
In this one, I got the spring, really, spring grass coming up. That was your link, the spring pale shoots.
Do you think so? I can't. Yeah. I find I have a really hard time remembering what I wrote. I know I wrote Hot World Beat White Tent, because
right.
that was in the summer in the Mendocino Music Festival.
Right. Yeah.
So that's how you include something. Right. I knew that.
Oh, no. Hurrah, that season long gone? No, that's Sandy.
That's Sandy.
I said that?
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go, kid. Anyway, I got the link, and I was going through a place called Loveland, and I'm not joking. There is a town called Loveland in Colorado, and I crossed the railroad tracks into the proverbial other side of the railroad tracks, and I saw this muscle car with "We love you, stay sober" on it, and I thought, perfect. Stopped the car and wrote it down, you know, and then there I had it, and it was like I just gotten the letter in the mail, and I just, oh, there it is. Thank you.
And you can tell when that one that says "storm in our favor, hearken our new president to change on our mind," that was when Obama was.
Yeah.
And that's almost characteristic of Maureen's links, is that she is very conscious of what's going on in the world, in the news, because she also wrote the stanza about antiquity burning, which was the hostage taking in Mumbai. So, you know, she's very aware of that, where the rest of us are a little bit more, you know, kind of in our own little world. But what was interesting...
Who wrote "Storm in Our Favor, Hearken Our New President"?
That was
That's Maureen.
Yeah.
Well, she wrote that one, too.
Yeah.
Right, and I, interestingly enough, when I saw that, I knew it was the whole Obama thing, so I thought, well, you know, Obama has been linked to Lincoln. Lincoln is on
the
penny.
Oh, that's
and picked it up for good luck. So you see how I linked to Maureen's thing that way. So, you know, I mean, that those are the kinds of things that you look for, that you try for. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And there's something called a passing link.
Yeah. It's like a passing chord in music. It's something that you write to get someplace else. So you're not calling attention to yourself. You're not calling attention to anything. You're just basically writing what would be a transition in prose. You know, you're playing. You're a good team player. You're just going to pass the thing on. So you just do something that's very simple. And a lot of times that's wonderful if you can do it. If you can really be simple, and you know, just a really simple pass, and you just pass it on, and it opens up to some other things. You might put in, you know, just a little bit of season or something, just something. But you're not trying for anything. You're just gonna keep the thing going. Mm-hmm. So it's that they're very hard to write.
So do you think that one is that? Or this one that I wrote, "She longs for a quiet cup of tea under the delicate maple."
Yeah, that's a passing.
Simple.
Yeah, simple. Boom. You know, you're someplace else. So.
Yeah, no, you just pass the responsibility on to the next person.
I'm taking a rest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you're shirking your duty and you're getting away with it.
Do you find a difference in the piece as a whole based on the number of people involved in writing it? I mean, there was a real difference in the two that were read this evening.
Right, there's a lot more diversity.
Right, the first one being two people had a real kind of elegant, kind of dance-like quality to it. And the second one, being five people, was really intense. And, well, some of the imagery, of course, was violent, but it had that kind of real intensity to it. So I don't know if you find, based on the number of people who are involved in the piece.
Yeah, and we noticed that. Yeah,
it was almost kind of explosive.
Yeah.
I kept waiting. You know,
that
would be under the delicate.
Well, because it's
right.
It's unpredictable.
Yeah,
it's unpredictable. In that
if you have five, then you have five worlds.
Right.
Coming
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And five points of view.
Yeah. And funny the way you did it with geographical.
Yeah.
Five different geographies.
Five different seasons, in some cases,
yeah.
And certain.
Weather,
yeah.
People, everything.
So, any other questions?
Yeah. If you get it in the... excuse me. No, I was just going to say about time. Have you got as much time as you want, or when you get it in the mail, do you have to get it right off?
Well, generally, we used to just let it go. You know, you answered it when you had time. Well, this last time, I said, hey... you know, these guys would write it in 3-minute increments when they were in a group. I said, let's have a 3-day rule. From the day that you get it, you have 3 days to send it off in the mail. Well, that didn't work. Because Sandy was on vacation, or, you know, it got sent the wrong way. Because and when you have five people and you set up the sequence, you want everybody to have what we call the special. So they either have a moon stanza or a flower stanza. Hoku is the first stanza, and the last stanza is called Ageku. And so each of these is a specific, special stanza. So there were five of us, and we tried to have at least one person have a special stanza. Maureen got two, but, you know, that's the way it worked out. And the three-day rule did not work, I have to say. Sandy was spending time in Mexico.
Oh, shucks.
She was in New York.
The last lines we wrote, I came back from Mexico, and I got mine, and I sent it right off.
Right up.
Yeah. Right off, because I wanted it to be done for this event.
Yeah, we were hurrying for this.
No, and Sandy's really good about these things. It's just, you
sometimes
know.
When I know I can wait, I just hang out, because I always do the easiest thing first. So, like, if I'm reading five books and one of them is a escapist novel, I read that first and finish it. You know, so that's how I am. And so, but if I know I have to do something, it's an assignment, and I get it done. So,
but we have a lot of fun, and it's always a very friendly thing. And you know, but you know, we really, I don't think we revised any of these things except for the stupid mistakes my computer made.
Yes, he put crown instead of crowd.
Yeah,
and I finally noticed it.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, what I'd like to say about this evening is that I tried to teach Renga in a class at Wayne State University for a friend, and we only had like, I don't know, an hour and a half or two or something. And it was very hard, but this way, where you read and discuss the parts of it, I think would be a much better way. Do you feel like you understood fairly well the forms and how to do it? Because I just couldn't. If Renga is quite hard to teach people because they're not used to the form and the formalities and the rules, and even the linking is hard. And these were young people, and so even it was hard for them. And so it was interesting, because I don't teach writing poetry ever, but I was there, and I liked this form, and the teacher wanted something different to be exposed to the students. But this felt like a really good way to teach it, by reading one and talking before and after about how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is so different from Western prosody that coming to it, if you have a background in Western literature, this is very, very strange. It's like from another planet. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have to immerse yourself in it. And, you know, some people have a knack for it. And Sandy has a knack for it. And, you know, she just kind of took to it. But I tried.
A woman with a persimmon in her hands.
Yeah, I know.
That's Northern California goddess.
I bet you wrote that line, long days without oranges, too.
Yeah. I was thinking, did I write that, Pat, too?
What?
The Bolivia one? That
the Bolivia
one?
Orange.
Yeah, see, I write political stuff, too.
Yeah.
And long, I don't know where Long Days Without Oranges actually came. Well, because it's called, which one did I write that in? Oh,
oranges.
The other one.
Yeah.
I'm so mixed up.
Yes.
Yeah, because it was bitter, because it was raw and orange, I felt I should get a little bit of orange in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Bolivia is a very tropical country, so you know, you're not sure when you say things, but that what was maybe happening in my mind. It's like when Pat talks about the commentary, I could only do commentary right when I was writing, because I don't remember a thing, as you can see. What happens with these poems is they just become a poem, long poem, and even though I can see the distinctions, it really becomes of a piece even if it isn't a piece. And with Pat and I particularly, I can tell when he writes certain things. And sometimes he's written some that have really more Pat feel. He says things, you know, like he was saying scatology and stuff. Sometimes he says things that aren't elegant. And when I read them, I go, oh, you know, is this okay? But those are the ones I know that he's written. You know, and so
the inelegant ones.
Yeah, the inelegant ones. Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah.
Mine are elegant.
Yeah, right. Like soap written on a car
window. Yeah, right.
Very elegant.
That's very elegant.
You can even see that talking about these poems is a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
It's a pleasure. And I think that's really important, if we can take this some kind of art as a pleasure with people. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like I've been writing bad letters and notes for all these years, and we would never be doing that otherwise. And Keith sends me really nice things in the mail, pretty things, and he sent me a calligraphy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I sent him a postcard to thank you, but it got to the wrong address. I
just got it, yeah.
So
lucky it wasn't the link. You wouldn't have had a complete poem to that. You're getting a special deal here.
Yeah. So it's a real convivial activity, yeah. And I'm really into conviviality.
Right.
And so it would be great if other people would write them just for fun. Mm-hmm. And a way to put something else into your communication with people.
And remember, you can always quit. There's rankers that don't go 36 stanzas,
yeah.
And there's just ranker
12?
Fragments, 12 or whatever, you know. What are they called, Jim? I forget.
Shitan.
Yeah. The Japanese have a name for everything, so. And it's really, you know, the thing about the ranker, which really got me, was when I started reading about it, and I really was attracted to it, and reading about the Japanese part of it and everything, I thought, this is impossible to explain. You know, how do you explain this? There's all these exceptions to the rules and everything. And then I thought, I tried to explain baseball once to somebody who was Japanese, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, because you sort of have to grow up with it or something. So you have to just understand that you're not going to get all the rules, and that there are so many. And then I keep reading new books, and they say, well, that isn't really true. So-and-so says this, but we don't do it that way, you know. So it's sort
so
of
we
like
don't we don't feel that we need to do it that way either. And we make up our own rules. But what's interesting is that if we come across something, some new kind of kink in it, we learn something new about it, we say, well, let's try that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not so much a you know, that we're replicating a Japanese verse form. Essentially what we're doing is we're taking a Japanese verse form and synthesizing the form into an American verse form.
That's fun. And, you know, if you ever watch the Japanese play baseball, it's a much different game. For example, what the fans do in the stands is
what do they do?
Huh? They have corporate sections, and they all have these incredible cheering things that they do all together, and they clap and things. Yeah, when the baseball went on strike, they started broadcasting Japanese baseball in the Bay Area, and I was just stunned to watch the way that the fans acted, and everything. Much different than.
And well, the other thing, I mean,
our Americans doing this. You know,
we're on the subject of Japanese baseball. I mean, their baseball is essentially done the same way that the Renku is done. It's done cooperatively.
Right.
There are not the big. I mean, there are big egos, but those egos are kept down, and you know, you don't have the big star. And if they do that, that's rather a shameful thing to be doing.
Well, yeah, and they have all these practices before, so when Americans go over there and play, they're exempted from the 5 hours of practice before the game. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, can you imagine?
But they're getting more Americanized, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But fortunately, we're becoming more Japanese-ized.
Well, that's interesting, Pat. Didn't Kenneth Koch wrote that poem, Ko or A Season on Earth, and wasn't that a Japanese baseball player?
Yeah, I think so.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he got ahead of us.
Kenneth Koch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're gonna wrap it up here. And Jim has some things to say.